Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yo. Technology. What is it all about?
So from the time you woke up in the morning to the time you went to bed at night, you were unconsciously nudged into eating better food, moving more, connecting with your neighbors. And their life expectancy after 2 years went up by 3 years per person. We helped them shed about 3,000 kilos off of their waistlines. Their life satisfaction went up by about 10%.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from behind the scenes and inside the minds of the top people in tech. I'm your host, Danny Fortson, the West Coast correspondent for the Sunday Times, and we have a very cool one for you this week. And I think it just might inspire you, in fact, to maybe take a walk, perhaps whip something up in the kitchen, pour yourself a glass of wine, and the best part is all of that may very well just inch you ever closer to living to the grand old age of 100. I'm not kidding. So what am I talking about? So longtime listeners will recall that a couple years back, I went along to the Milken Conference in Beverly Hills. And this is a big do where all the great and the good gather. It's kind of like Davos of the West. They get together and they talk about how we're going to propel humanity forward with the least damage imposed on the planet, on other people, etc. Anyhow, it was there that I met Dan Buettner, who is just a really interesting guy. He's an adventurer slash explorer who's done lots of very cool stuff, like riding his bike across Africa, if I recall correctly. He is best known for Blue Zones, which is a book that emerged from a very simple idea. And that was to find the oldest, healthiest people in the world, just naturally, hang out with them long enough to understand how they live their lives, and then pull out the commonalities, basically distill that and say, okay, if you live like these people, these groups of people, you will be healthier, you will live longer, etc. And the result was initially an article, and then a book, and then a company, in which Buettner goes around America helping cities do these simple things that can dramatically improve the lives and longevity of people who live there. It's a fascinating company. It's also called Blue Zones. I thought about him in these wild COVID times, and so I reached out because I was wondering what he was seeing, how cities and governments are reacting to these vast behavior changes that are being imposed upon us, and whether the pandemic could actually push us further toward some of these habits that could help us live longer, or in the converse, perhaps set us back, depending on how this is all kind of shaking out. So I caught up with Dan this week via Zoom at his home in Santa Barbara, California, and he is full of interesting facts and figures, which you will soon hear. And I promise you, you will get a lot from this discussion, not only about how he built his business from just one singular off-the-wall idea, but also to some very basic things that we can all do to just be healthier, happier, and live longer. So I think you're going to enjoy this one, and I'm going to stop talking. So without further ado, I give you Dan Buettner, founder of Blue Zones. Enjoy. Thanks for taking the time, first of all. I don't know when I reached out to you first. It was probably a few weeks ago, right?
I think just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. But I wanted to talk to you just because the world has been turned upside down. Since we spoke on for the pod, what was probably a couple of years ago, obviously there's a lot of stuff there that you talked about, like living in kind of the Blue Zones lifestyle and what that does for your health, et cetera. And I just wanted to catch up with you to talk about how you see all of this playing out for good, bad, or indifferent. Perhaps the best way to start is if you could just give a brief overview of Blue Zones, what it is, and it's particularly like, you know, those things you distilled from studying these populations about healthy lifestyles, then we can get into what is happening in the world today and how that all mixes together or doesn't.
The original idea of Blue Zones grew out of a National Geographic article that sought to, in a sense, reverse engineer longevity to find the statistically longest lived parts of the world. In other words, places that have achieved the outcome we want. They live a long time and they avoid obesity and heart disease, diabetes, cancer. And then once we find those places, try to find the common denominators or the correlates that seem to be explaining longevity. So the original work involved two demographers. I led the effort. And we found the longest lived men in the world in Sardinia, Italy, the longest lived women in Okinawa, Japan, an island off the coast of Turkey called Ikaria, where populations not only live in 8 years longer than Americans do, but they also have about 1/10 the rate of dementia. In Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica, northern Costa Rica, we found a population that has the lowest rate of middle-age mortality. What does that mean? That means they have the best chance, about a threefold chance of reaching a healthy age 95 than people from Great Britain do. And then in the United States, we found the longest lived people among the Seventh-day Adventists, a population of Christians that are living about a decade longer than their North American counterparts. Then we struck off and did the work to find the common denominators.
And what are the common denominators?
We found 9 of them. I'll do a broad brushstroke. Number one, they, instead of exercising to get their physical activity, they live in environments where they're nudged to move every 20 minutes or so. So that means every time they go to work or their kids go to school or they go out to eat, it occasions a walk. Their houses aren't filled with mechanical contraptions that have engineered physical activity out of their lives. They do yard work and kitchen work and housework by hand. And they tend to have gardens. Most of these places have the benefit of 3 seasons of gardens. So they're out getting that low intensity physical activity of weeding and every day. Number two, they're eating mostly a plant-based diet. The 5 pillars of every longevity diet in the world are whole grains, including corn, rice, and wheat. Leafy greens, not only spinach, but things like dandelion. Tubers like sweet potatoes, nuts. If you're eating about a handful of nuts a day, it's probably adding 2 years to your life expectancy. And then the longevity all-star is beans. They tend to put their family first. They tend to belong to religion. And the interesting thing is they tend to be surrounded by a cluster of people. They call this a moai in Okinawa that support the right behaviors. And we now know that your 3 best friends are obese and unhealthy. You're about 3 times more likely to be overweight yourself. So one of the best prescriptives you can do to add years to your life is add a handful of friends whose idea of recreation is walking or running or playing tennis, a friend who cares about you on a bad day. It's not a bad idea, as disruptive this may sound, to have a vegan in your social network, because we know we tend to eat what the people around us eat. So vegan's going to nudge you away from that hamburger or that pork chop and into something that's going to be better for you.
Those were the kind of the common themes that emerged from these 7 different pockets of people around the world.
Yes, 5 places. The big insight, though, and the insight upon which we've built a big company and we have 200 employees and over 50 cities working with us, is the notion that health, at least healthy longevity, almost is never successfully pursued. In a sense, longevity pursues us by setting up our environment the right way. In other words, these people living in Okinawa and Sardinia, they don't have heroic discipline. They don't have a great sense of individual responsibility. They just live their lives. the keenest insight I believe we brought back is that constellation of nudges and defaults in their environment, and it brought them to America, and it put them to work in American cities, and have seen real drops in obesity, drops in chronic disease at the population level, not by trying to convince people to change their diet, convince people to get out and take a jog, convince people to take nutrients, but by simply sort of the Adam Smith silent hand of nudging them towards eating more plant-based, moving more, socializing more in the right way, and then knowing their sense of purpose and living that sense of purpose.
Here we are in the middle of a once-in-a-century pandemic. Listen to what those factors that you're talking about. Some of those things, I mean, aside from like the increased mortality from if you get this and you get sick, or God forbid you die or whatever, the severe behavior modification that this pandemic has created has been really interesting to watch for me. And like things like all of a sudden everybody's wearing masks. And in my neighborhood in Oakland, all of a sudden you see a lot more people walking, just walking around because they literally can't do anything else. And I'm just wondering, from what you have seen, because you work with a lot of cities, is this changing the way people are thinking about how they set up their cities, especially in America, where everything is so car-based? I mean, these aren't things that you can easily undo, but just what are you seeing kind of on the coalface of all this?
First of all, realize that the sort of non-exercise physical activity is going to do a population confer more benefit than gyms or CrossFit or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What this pandemic has done has given many cities the opportunities to reevaluate the way they're using their streets. There's something like 20% of your city is occupied by asphalt, which is largely just wasted. So we see several cities, Fort Worth, Texas, for example, where the several streets downtown have been turned into pedestrian malls. They've made temporary bicycle lanes. Right here, I'm in Santa Barbara, and State Street, yeah, which is the biggest thoroughfare of the city, that's been closed down. And all these restaurants that which normally would be devastated by the lack of business, they've just brought their tables outside into the streets. So you not only have a cleaner environment where less disease is spread, you still have a place where people can meet safely. And this COVID is an opportunity for cities to reevaluate the priority they're giving to cars over human beings. You know, we're lobbying very hard that they just keep State Street closed down, which would do an enormous favor to pedestrians. By the way, if you optimize the built environment in a city, which is to say that you have bike lanes, sidewalks, trees, which are very important, an adequate public transportation system, and parks that are cleaned up, you can raise the physical activity level of the entire city by about 20%. No yoga classes, no gym. And that will occasion the city of a million people many billions of dollars of lower healthcare costs over time. So it's a great investment.
And how difficult is that to sell as an investment? Because again, if you're talking to city officials, so for example, I'm thinking of my in-laws, they live in Dallas, Texas. And the times we've gone there, I've just been amazed at how concretized it is. It's all freeways and more freeways, and you cannot exist without a car, which is, you know, not unique, but it seems like particularly extreme there. These are big. To kind of unwind that requires a complete rethinking of a remaking of cities. And imagine you have to kind of make this a dollars and cents type. Is the willingness to listen to that argument more now than it was before?
Right next door to Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, which is, I would argue, our biggest Blue Zone project success story. We helped them lower the obesity rate by 6% while it went up in Dallas, which is literally, you know, a twin city right next door.
Yeah.
And some of the things they did, there are seven different districts there. They call them parishes. And we got each of those parishes to let us do what we call a marquee built environment project. So it's one street that we put on a diet. We lower traffic. We create a pedestrian mall in some examples. in order to sell the idea to people, to policymakers, they have to see it. And to go to Dallas, for example, and say, we're going to make your city walkable and it's going to cost $10 billion over the next 10 years, it's a hard sell. But what's not a hard sell is to take a particularly egregious street that's soulless with five lanes of traffic whipping by and the retail is not doing so well. And you put it on a diet, you slow traffic down, you narrow traffic lanes, you put trees up, and you start to discover that the retailers that line that street start doing better because they get more foot traffic. Then you start publishing the lower rates of accidents, the fewer children that get killed in that environment. And all of a sudden, people a few streets over look at that beautiful tree-lined street with ease traffic, and they say, we want one of those. And then you sell it incrementally. And about that time, 2 or 3 years into it, when other neighborhoods are asking for these marquee projects, then you bring the success to city council and you propose something called a complete streets policy package, or they go by a few names, but essentially you're never going to sell the idea of ripping up every street in a city to make it walkable and bikeable. But every street gets ripped up naturally about once every 7 years because it just reaches its expiration date. And that's the opportunity to cheaply put in the bike lane and the sidewalk and the safety curbs and plant the tree. So it really doesn't have to cost anything, but it does require people to accept the notion that the problem's not going to go away on its own. What happens is you get this sort of induced demand with cars. That what most politicians do, people complain because there's traffic. So what they do is they widen the lanes and they invite more cars so that within 2 or 3 years, you have the same jams, just bigger.
Yeah.
And it happens over and over and over again. And it takes the courageous, visionary politicians like Betsy Price in Fort Worth to say, well, wait a minute, this isn't the type of environment that is conducive to business. It's not conducive to human safety, and it's not conducive to health. So let's incrementally unwind this, and it can be done. And we've done it in 27 American cities so far.
Right. And what's interesting is I was just thinking about my own personal experience, having lived in London, and you know, you're kind of walking, you're taking public transport, one, and two, you're walking around everywhere. And then here, it's like, yeah, I have to make an effort to get on my bike or go for a run or whatever. And you know, or the another way I think about it is like trying to learn a language. If you move to Spain, you have to learn Spanish. You're forced into it by your surroundings. Whereas if I live here, I have to kind of sit down and read textbooks, and it's just much more difficult. But it feels like that's a similar principle of just setting up something that is just the very structure of it requires you to live a different type of way.
Which goes back to this core principle of Blue Zones. If you want people to get healthier, don't try to change their behavior, change their environment. Your example of Spain, you don't have to hound people to take Spanish lessons. They show up and they go into a bar and they meet an attractive person, and that attractive person only speaks Spanish. So you're going to learn it, whether you like it or not. I think it's a big idea for America. And if any policymaker that takes the time to read the evidence on the lower death rate, the better health, and the better business outcomes you get when you make a bikeable, walkable or bikeable city. You think about places like Copenhagen, Amsterdam, New York City, London. Look around at the people on the streets there. They're not 40% obese like you'll see in many Midwestern towns where everybody drives everywhere. So the benefits are very visible and very tactile to creating streets for human beings and not just automobiles.
When did you write the original piece for National Geographic? What year was that?
2005.
So 2005. So you do that and then you're like, I can make a business out of this. Is that the first time you had set up a business?
No, I didn't set out to create a business. I'm an explorer, and I learned over time that the exploration that makes the biggest difference are people go find something that's meaningful, not just climb Everest for the 3,000th time, or you know, jump out of a hot air balloon in a bungee cord. So no, I was wholly motivated, just had this idea and seeing if I could find something really useful. It was a cover story for National Geographic that led to a New York Times bestselling book called The Blue Zones. And then I'd be on this talk show circuit. My publisher would set me up on Good Morning America and CNN and Fox and Oprah. And I'd sort of go into these green rooms, these waiting rooms ahead of time. And I'd talk about my findings on TV. And I'd come in and there'd be some other dietary expert, you know. And I thought to myself, you know, what I found is really legitimate. These people have been living in blue zones the same way for thousands of years. Could I reproduce that in the United States? And in 2009, I got a grant from AARP and a collaboration agreement from
AARP.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Big grant, actually.
For our overseas listeners, that's American Association of Retired Persons. It's like the big, powerful old folks lobby, effectively.
But they also have a huge foundation. And with that foundation, they generally try to do good, but they like it especially when that good accrues to people 55 and over or 50 and over. They love this idea. I think they just love the notion that American cities could learn from the oldest people in the world. So it was, you know, thematically aligned with their values. We auditioned 5 American cities, picked Albert Lea, Minnesota, and they let us help them change their policies, their restaurants, grocery stores, workplaces, schools, and even individual people's homes.
And what was that city when you went in there?
It was Albert Lea, Minnesota. 70% of them were suffering from obesity or being overweight.
70%.
You know, it used to be a meatpacking plant town. People ate way too much beef and pork, and they drank too much dairy. About a third of them were suffering from diabetes or pre-diabetes. Shockingly, we found, even though it was a picturesque little town on the prairie, people were devastatingly lonely as they imploded into their homes and onto their devices. And for 2 years, I had the benefit of getting a lot of those people out, connecting them, putting them in Moais. We got the city council to adopt complete streets. So bike lanes went in, a big lake at the edge of town that you couldn't get around it. They put a big trail around it. They passed a whole litany of small ordinances that favored health over non-health, I guess. Critical mass of all the schools, restaurants, and grocery stores became Blue Zone certified. So from the time you woke up in the morning to the time you went to bed at night, you were unconsciously nudged into eating better food, moving more, connecting with your neighbors. And their life expectancy after 2 years went up by 3 years per person. We helped them shed about 3,000 kilos off of their waistlines. Their life satisfaction went up by about 10%. So it was a huge success that got national press. Mm. And then a big Fortune 100 company called Healthways came to me and said, "Hey, we love what you're doing. We think it's the future of health in America." And we formed a partnership that was 10 years ago. And to date, we now have 53 American cities that have brought my team in to blue zone them, so to speak, pervasively. Every city we've had a chance to go in, we've seen the obesity rates drop, smoking rates drop, and people's life satisfaction rises. And that's as it's measured by Gallup.
In terms of that 10-year arc, thinking again today about what's happening today with the pandemic, I feel like a lot of people that have come on this pod in the last few months have said, you know, we were trying to do X, and then this has just accelerated what we were trying to do by 5 years, 10 years, whatever, you know, extreme number. Do you think this could potentially be a moment for what you are trying to do? In terms of, like, just thinking about the Santa Barbara example, you know, pedestrianizing the main drag, you know, is that going to be temporary or permanent or that kind of thing? Or do you think this is something that could be kind of a, you know, for lack of a better term, a game changer?
For the type of built environment demonstrations, yes, it could be a game changer. But overall, the way these Blue Zones projects are funded is they're publicly supported but privately funded, and it's usually by hospital systems and insurance companies. And they're beleaguered right now. Hospital systems are hemorrhaging money because of COVID.
So the hospital systems usually fund this, like the local hospital system?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, and it's typically the ones who have taken on some accountability. They're the enlightened ones. And then also the Blue Cross Blue Shield plans, the enlightened Blue Cross Blue Shield plans, because they have kind of a double bottom line. They not only have to manage to a profit, but they also have to, their feet are held to the fire to improve the health of the community. So that's where we come in.
Well, theoretically, if you blue zone a city, they'll have less patients.
In every city, we see fewer cases of diabetes, heart disease, several types of cancers. And remember, when you're dealing with a population of a million, 1% improvement has an enormous, occasions enormous cost savings. So the bad news is the healthcare system is overwhelmed by COVID right now. But executives understand that our hair is on fire with COVID right now, and it will perhaps kill 200,000 or 300,000 people this year. But chronic disease will kill 20 million. Times as many people. Most of the people dying of COVID have one of these comorbidities. They have a chronic disease. So, you know, unless you address the fundamental issues, the things that are weakening Americans and making them susceptible to COVID, the problem, COVID's not going away, by the way. It's here forever. The sooner we adjust the way we live our lives to accommodate the disease and minimize its impact, the better off we're going to be.
Someone made the kind of wry comment that basically what COVID done is help America discover Europe or European style living, to this point around sidewalk dining and being outside and walking more, et cetera. Is there in Europe, do you guys operate? Is there any interest, or is it basically because the way so much of Europe is set up, they kind of don't need you? Because there are still major health issues there, but it's, you know, in many cases, it's quite different. It's more blue zone-y than America.
It is more blue zone-y. But we've been approached by many cities in Europe. We just don't have the capacity to do it. I mean, we're still learning this. We're in the fifth iteration. You know, we're 2.3. Right. By the way, most blue zones are, because of America's influence, are devolving. Their longevity advantage is being paved under the standard American diet and the rush towards mechanization and the, you know, ubiquity of this thing. Europe is not immune. They're making the same mistakes we did. They're just a little bit behind us in making these mistakes.
You mentioned a couple times trees being important. Why?
It may be just the fact that we evolved with trees. I mean, there's good research that shows that if you have, you know, I wrote a book and a cover story for National Geographic on happiness. And there's research that shows if you just have a window that looks out on greenery or trees, you report higher levels of well-being. If you have a tree in front of if you have two trees in front of your house, the average house is worth about $40,000 more dollars than it would be if you didn't have any trees in front of it. So a lot of what the decision to walk to work or walk to the store, part of it is, do I feel safe? But the other part of it, is it pleasant? So if you have to walk through some concrete jungle past graffitied houses, you're less likely to go make that trip on foot than if you're walking down a sidewalk street with beautiful trees and greenery. It appeals to the human condition and I think both subconscious and conscious levels.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar, and you can hear my afternoon program on Times Radio. Wherever you are in the world, do join me as I talk about the big issues of the day to experts, journalists, and guests. Listen to my afternoon show for free on DAB Radio, your smart speaker, online at times.radio and via our free Times Radio app. Every Monday to Thursday, 4 p.m. till 7 on Times Radio. Know your times.
On the business side, it's kind of approved by a city but funded by private health insurance. Has that evolved? Because that's a really interesting model. I'm just curious, how do you get paid, and was it difficult to arrive at this thing, at this model where this is how we implement it, this is how it gets paid for, this is how it works? Because again, it feels, especially I imagine 10 years ago, it was all a little bit squishy and a little bit unclear of how this, you know, who's going to pay for it, who accrues the benefit, and, you know, how that kind of the economic financial benefit is split up.
Yeah, we have an enormous headwind because the way the American healthcare system works is the incentives are all lined up behind sickness. It's all private. So if you're a pharmaceutical company, if your profits rely on people coming in and buying drugs. If you're a hospital, your profits rely on people filling beds and ordering service. If you're a doctor, your profits rely on people coming in for visits and procedures. And there's no incentive. There's no economic incentive in this country to keep people healthy. Everybody loses money in the healthcare industry if you stay healthy. So we come along with this absolutely disruptive model to say, well, we're actually going to keep your city healthy. And there's no public funding for that. The places that tend to fund us are enlightened CEOs. They're typically, the CEO has been around for 10, 20, 30 years and have seen the same sort of Sisyphean apps and schemes, coaching schemes to get people healthier. And they look at our data and they say, this actually works and I want to do something good. And there's enough of those enlightened CEOs out there. Alan Weiss from Naples Community Hospital, or Mike Gold, the CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, that say, we're going to do it because it's the right thing, and they figure out how to get it paid. In Orlando, which we've been working in Orlando, Florida, for the past year or so, and they have a very interesting business coalition that have come together. They realize that usually the second most expensive line item on their annual budget for these big companies is healthcare cost. So the big employers there have come to the table to fund a Blue Zone project there. And if that model works, as we think it will, I think it'll be a big breakthrough for these kinds of proactive chronic disease mitigation projects.
So on the whole, for example, I have a friend, when you're talking about hospitals that are suffering, I have a friend who is a pulmonologist, a lung specialist, running a COVID ICU unit, and he's had to take a 20% pay cut. Because his hospital, as they had cut out all the elective surgeries, which is, of course, the source of all the money. So not only is he having to work more, he's getting paid less to take care of these critically ill patients. So that I understand that the pressure that hospitals are under is immense. So you have that on one end, and on the other, you have these moves to fundamentally change the way people live and move around the world. When you step back, do you think this will ultimately nudge people more toward what you're talking about, or will actually set it back when you think about just the nuts and bolts of getting these things funded and actually happening?
First of all, we have about 60 cities that still want us to come in, but they've kind of hit the pause button because of COVID. Yeah. But you touched on something I'd like to expand on a bit. That you read the news about COVID, and it's just so overwhelming that is hitting the world, 130,000 people have died. But I actually believe there's several kind of Blue Zones-esque silver linings to it. First of all, because people aren't going out to eat, they're forced to relearn the art of cooking at home. Yes. And when you cook at home, on average, you consume about 200 fewer calories than you would if you went out. And that food is, on average, much lower sodium, much lower fat, because you can control it. If you saw the crap they put in soup in restaurants, you wouldn't eat it. The fact that you're cooking it, and ideally cooking it with your family, is a huge opportunity. I think number two, according to Gallup, 2 million surveys, only about 30% of Americans actually like their job. To put a finer point on it, 30% of Americans are able to use their skills to do what they do best at work. So they're not getting a lot of purpose. These people are losing their jobs or being furloughed. And, you know, I'm sensitive to the trauma of losing your job. And there's a lot of people in America under financial constraints. But there's a lot of people for whom this will give an opportunity to reboot, to take stock in what they really love to do. You know, maybe they lost their job as an appraiser or as a delivery person delivering pizzas, but this gives them another bite at the apple at finding something that really fuels their heart. And then lastly, and I was a big sort of Luddite, like the way we're connecting right now, Danny, and, you know, I see you. I was never really a big fan of FaceTime or the Zoom sort of thing, but I think people have, because they've imploded, they've learned how to create emotional connection with friends and family with technology that transcends the just sort of facile emoji or let's meet here, that people having real conversations online. So I don't think it's all negative.
One thing I just wanted to circle back on, you mentioned purpose. Is purpose important to health?
So first of all, anecdotally, you see vocabulary and purpose in all blue zones. People don't wake up with this existential angst of, you know, what should I be doing with my life? They know exactly what they should be doing with their lives. But there's a very famous study by Robert Butler, who was the first director of the National Institutes on Aging. And he had cohorts of people writing about their lives, and people who were expressing a clear sense of purpose were living about 8 years longer than people who were rudderless in life. So there is a strong correlation between purpose and living longer. People who have a strong sense of purpose are more likely to take their medicines. They're more likely to get out of bed and do something active, to keep their brains engaged, to keep socially connected. And all of these things have an enormous impact on how long you're going to live. And I would argue a much bigger impact on how long they're going to live than any pharmaceutical.
It is interesting that there's a whole movement out here, which I'm sure you're well aware of, is, you know, meditation apps and this kind of wellness movement, a lot of which is, frankly, snake oil, as far as I'm concerned. But there is some stuff there that is quite useful that people do seem to, that are people are gravitating toward, which in another time would have just been dismissed as, you know, this is just nonsense. But it does feel like the outcomes are real and significant, or can be in some cases.
I have no confidence in the sort of Fitbit, Get Active apps. But I do put some credibility in meditation apps, because meditation really does work. If you get on one of these apps where you stick to it every day, they make sure you show up for a month or so at a time so you actually develop the skill. It's doing a real service to people.
Lastly, before I let you go, you also have the Blue Zones cookbook, which I actually have in my kitchen. Is there something you're doing right now, a recipe that I should kind of roll out? Because all we do is cook now. Cook, eat, and look after the kids. That's all.
So first of all, I cringe at cookbook, because this was I took a National Geographic photographer. I'm a writer. I did the science reporting, but I also did go up into the highlands and the remote islands in the Blue Zone and capture recipes that have been cooked for over 500 years.
This is not Betty Crocker,
Betty Crocker. It's been 11 weeks on the New York Times bestselling list. But there is one recipe there I want you to try, Danny. It's called the Melisse Minestrone. So I met the longest lived family in the history of the world. 9 siblings, collective age, 860 years. They ate the same lunch every day. Sourdough bread, a small glass of Cannonau wine, and this minestrone, which is...
This all sounds fabulous. Wine for lunch. Wine and bread for lunch already. I'm sold.
And by the way, sourdough metabolically is vastly different than just a plain piece of white bread. If you're having a real sourdough, and you people in San Francisco have some of the best sourdough in the country, yeah, that actually lowers the glycemic load of a meal as opposed to a piece of white bread.
But oh, interesting.
Minestrone, we're finding now that arguably the most important quote unquote organ in our body is the 8 pounds of bacteria in our microbiome. It's at the end of our gut, 100 trillion bacteria that when you feed them right, they create something called short chain fatty acids, which modulate, keep your immune system healthy and fine tuned. It keeps inflammation under control and it governs your mood. And if you fail to feed those bacteria the right food, that whole system goes awry. The only thing those healthy bacteria eat is fiber. And they like all kinds of fiber. So you eat a Melisse minestrone. It's got 5 kinds of beans, garlic, onions, tomatoes. It's celery, carrots. And it's slow cooked, so those fibers are accessible to the body. Man, you eat that, your microbiome has a Mardi Gras party down there, and it rewards you. So I'm not even lying. I argue that minestrone is, you know, people like to find a superfood. I would argue, and I could marshal in the evidence, that is the best quote-unquote superfood you could possibly eat.
The siblings, would they all live in the same village?
Well, I was in the kitchen with 2 of them. They weren't, you know, they don't all hang out together, just like you're not with your brother right now.
Yeah.
But I went with 2 of them, and they told me that story, that their whole family eats it every day.
And how old are they?
Well, the oldest one's 109, and the youngest one's like 95. But
the young, wet behind the ears, 95-year-old.
Yeah, Tommy. He rides his bike to school still. And then, no, it's just, you know, it's a correlation, of course, but it's a good story. But for every one of these restaurants, I sat on a stool with my laptop and I watched these people make these foods. And part of the secret to cooking for longevity is getting the right recipes, the right ingredients. But a lot of it's how it's combined and how it's cooked. And that sort of art is disappearing in the way of, you know, General Mills and McDonald's. And, you know, I like to think of this as a piece of archival work, artistically wrought by great photography.
So I'm going to make the minestrone this week. I'll send you a picture and I'll take a straw poll of the family and see what we think. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old who are finicky these days, but we'll see.
Slow cook it.
We've got it was the one thing we bought as a housewarming gift that from somebody who got us a nice big crusette. I don't know how you say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those. It's a cast iron. Yeah. Enameled cast iron. Yeah. I love those. Those are also great, by the way, for making sourdough bread in. And
really?
Oh, they're amazing. Yeah. Wow. So you get the starter dough. You probably get it from one of the sourdough. It's just literally flour, whole wheat flour, water. You let it raise. You got to feed it. You don't even have to knead the dough. You just throw it at the bottom of that cast iron pot, and you put it in your oven for about an hour. Top on for the first half and top off for the second half. You'll get the most amazing bread.
I'm inspired. I appreciate you taking the time. I will leave you to more important matters.
Nothing more important than talking to Danny Ford.
And that is all the time we have. Before I go, I would be remiss if I didn't say first thanks to Dan for chatting. And also to tell you that I made the minestrone. It is fantastic. It is, and it has basically just a little a half a teaspoon of salt. But other than that, there's no salt in this big old pot that I made. I made it for my wife. She loved it too. Haven't tried it out on the kids yet. We shall see. But I'm feeling more vital already. Anyhow, that's it for this week. I hope you guys have a fabulous weekend and you actually get outside, maybe see some people, social distance, of course, and stay safe. In the meantime, take a moment, give a rating and review to this podcast, or even better yet, subscribe to the newspaper. which helps keep me employed. We will be back next week with another episode, of course. You can also find me online at thetimes.co.uk, on Twitter at Danny Fortson, or feel free to even email me with questions, concerns, suggestions, criticisms, whatever it may be, at danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. Have a good one. Talk to you next week.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.